No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Today we don't have a guest, so we're going to talk about whatever on our minds. So please call in and help us, because, you know, Kathleen doesn't let me say very much. So I want you to call in and help me out. But before we get started, let me introduce her all the way from Kansas. Here is Kathleen Gomez, searching for Toto, I suppose. I don't know what you're doing out there, Kathleen. How are you? What's going on? Why are you in Kansas, Dorothy?
Let me tell you, Senator Brown, I am on a quest. I am on a quest to go throughout the United States trying to find out where these jobs are. That, you know, I was seeing that you were just going to say something about how there's been such the economy is thriving. Well, I'm trying to find that. Now, I've spent time in North Dakota and, of course, Arizona and a little bit of California and now Kansas. And, you know, Kansas is growing. And I'm not sure, you know, what is growing in necessarily. I mean, there's just office park after office park after office park. Beautiful communities. I mean, they're kind of, we went to bowling lane and bocce courts that were kind of brand new building together. And that was really interesting. And their fitness center is like this unbelievable, you know, it has a healthy restaurant and it's got the nice, you know, what do I want to say? Spa, and you can go sit by the pool. It's a really interesting community, and it's very pretty.
Well, you know, I hate to be critical, but you're going to North Dakota and Kansas. I mean, what about places like you left New York. Aren't there jobs in New York, California, the big states, Arizona?
No, there's no jobs, and I have decided that I am looking at states that have Republican-controlled governors have been in control for a long period of time.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing no growth in those places. Like, I look at Arizona, and for all, supposedly all these, you know, it's run by the Republicans, there is no growth in that state whatsoever. So it's interesting that there seems to be growth in Kansas, but I'm not even sure if that actually correlates because I'm not sure who the governor is here. But it just, you know, it's amazing how our country is so big that so many different things are going on in different regions of our country. And, you know, it's just such a kind of an interesting thing. I think politicians should have the same where if they want to stay a politician, they should travel into, like, regions that they're not, you know, they don't know anything about, like maybe the Northwest or, you know, the Midwest. Midwest is so different than the plains, you know, North Dakota and South Dakota. So it's interesting. And so that's what I'm coming out to D.C. too. So we're just
so excited.
I know. I bet you are.
We're getting a guest room ready and the tree fell on the neighbor's house, but it didn't hit ours. So, and it would have been right over the room you're staying in too. So thank God. You know, you would have been camping in the backyard. But, you know, as you probably, I'm sure you've heard these stories 1,000 times from me, but when I was 18, I went to all 48 states.
Right.
And in my Ford Pinto, slept in the Pinto, slept on the floor, college dorms.
I can just imagine.
I was gone for 4 months, and it cost me somewhere between $800 and $900, including including all my gas and everything. I mean, I think that, that gas was like 28 cents a gallon in those days.
Right.
You know, they were having gas wars in Texas, where I remember going through Texas and you know, you'd look around and the gas would be, you know, 21 cents or 19 cents a gallon. And the best thing is that if you filled up your car, you got a free glass. So you got like $4 worth of gas and it came with a free glass. So,
right.
But I got to go through all the states and it is true. America's just the most beautiful country, from Arizona with places like the Grand Canyon and California with Yosemite. And I went to Yellowstone up in Wyoming, and I've never been to Glacier, which is in Montana, but I understand that's beautiful. And the Dakotas, you know, right. My great goal in life, the one thing that's on the top of my bucket list, is to go to Sturgis. For the rally, you know, get my Harley out there and
I have a connection for you. You know, you're connected. All you have to do is go there.
All I have to do is get my Allen. Big fat rear end on my Harley and get out there. I think I'll UPS the Harley out there and meet it there or something. But yeah, what an amazing country this is. And of course, on Friday, it was our birthday. We all went out. I was in a parade in Palisades, which is a great little neighborhood in Washington, where we still have a parade that includes all the politicians and people in fire engines and Boy Scout troops and people on bicycles. The good news is that my son Nicholas drove the car in the parade, the senator car, and didn't run over any small children, so we're happy with that.
Oh my
but
gosh.
Then at the end of the parade, Kathleen, a bomb squad truck comes down the road with all its sirens and everything on, you know, as part of the parade. And you
right.
can see people thinking, oh my God. Are these guys in the parade or is there a bomb somewhere? You know, so I think next year I would say to the organizers, let everybody know that the bomb squad is coming before you. They came in this big, like, armored vehicle, you know, and it was like, oh my Lord, what's going on? So anyway, that was fun and we had a great time. And you know, and that leads me, of course, right into my pitch about D.C. statehood. Next week, while you're here, you're going to help us lobby up on the Hill. We're going to go to the members of the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee in the Senate, who now have a statehood bill with 16 co-sponsors. There are, coincidentally, 16 members of that committee, but only Senator Carper, who introduced the legislation, is a co-sponsor. So we're going to try to convince the other 15 people. We're going to go up there with veterans, and we're going to go up with American flags that have 51 stars on them. People may not know that the American flag's been changed 26 times since it was first introduced by Betsy Ross. So we want to convince them that there's one more time that it needs to be changed right now to add the District of Columbia as a state. And we're also going to remind them that our national anthem, we have a real connection to the flag here in Washington. Our national anthem was written by a guy who was in the D.C. National Guard, Lieutenant Francis Scott Key. Taps was written by a Congressional Medal of Honor winner from the District of Columbia. And, you know, at every military funeral and at the end of the day, when they lower the flag, that's what's played. So we want to remind these guys that so many people in the district have served, and that we should be the 51st state. And in other news, as far as district statehood goes, a congressman from Maryland is trying to overturn our recent decriminalization of marijuana. And the funny thing about it, or the unusual thing about it, is that the state that he represents has exactly the same law. His name is Representative Harris. Of course, he's a Republican from Maryland's Eastern Shore. And when they said to him, but Congressman, your state of Maryland has exactly the same law, why would you try to change the law in the District of Columbia? His response was, because I can. So we're still putting up with this nonsense every day in the district, and we're going to try to change things. And we're going to use – Kathleen Gomez, that's what we've missed the whole time for 213 years. You know, now that you're on the case, I'm sure we'll get it done.
There, we'll get it done. That's that. Get it done. Get her done, as they say.
Get her done.
You know,
exactly.
Get her done. So the plan is that you want to get at least, what, 16 more sponsors that are on this committee?
Yeah, and also the bill that the statehood bill resides in that committee. So we want to have a hearing in the committee, and there hasn't been a hearing since the 1990s on statehood. So that's a really important thing to us. We understand that we're not going to get it passed in the House of Representatives the way things are going with the Republican-controlled House. We've got 83 co-sponsors between the House and the Senate, not one Republican on the bill. So we know that's not going to happen. But what we'd like to do, Senator Carper has promised us a hearing, but it hasn't happened yet. So we want to get a hearing as early as we can in the late summer or the early fall. So that's another part of the strategy, is to encourage them to hold a hearing. And the hearing would be in this committee. So we're going to try to put some pressure on them to do that. And there's some great people on the committee. A guy named McCain from Arizona, I think.
There
you
go.
Yeah, and, you know, and although Senator McCain and I don't agree on much, he's an American hero, and I think he has great respect for the military. So hopefully he'll respond to this message coming from citizens and veterans. So that's really what we want to do. We want to get that out there.
Well, you know, it's always interesting because I always feel that I've gone to McCain's office before to lobby for something. I'm trying to remember what it was. And, you know, it was amazing how difficult it was to actually get to somebody, right? Even an aide. And I thought, you know, it's amazing how these guys forget that it's my taxpayer money, you know, it's people like me who basically pay his salary and you know, have him in office, and how little regard it is to what people are, you know, in their districts are concerned about. But I think it would be very interesting to see if we couldn't get some people to turn around this. And maybe what we can do is next Sunday have a list of them and then see if anybody out there will call and say, you know, you should do this. Let me ask you one question. What is the Republicans' biggest stand on why they should not let DC be state?
Well, you know, they never come right out and say that we shouldn't be equal. But their problem with statehood, according to them, is that it violates the Constitution. And it certainly does not violate the Constitution, because the Constitution says that the District of Columbia shall be established and that Congress shall have control over it. But it never says that it can't be a state. Nowhere does it say it can't be a state. And that's why we want to make it a state, because that's the easiest thing, the easiest way to become equal. And what it says is that Congress shall have exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over an area not to exceed 10 miles square. So if we shrink the nation's capital down to just the mall and the White House and the other government buildings, we can make the rest of it a state without violating the Constitution. And we actually, the District of Columbia used to be square, and it's not square anymore, because we gave the part which belonged to Arlington, which is now Arlington, we gave that back to Virginia, because just prior to the Civil War, some powerful landowners in Virginia were afraid that we were going to get rid of slavery, which we actually did. We were the first place in the country to free slaves through a compensated emancipation, and they wanted their land back, so we gave it back to them. And so there's even a precedent for making the District of Columbia smaller. So that's what we want to do. We want to keep it. The Congress can continue to have control over it. We just want them to stop having control over us.
So wait a minute. So in other words,
so that's their biggest complaint. They say it's a violation of the Constitution, and that we have to amend the Constitution.
But you do want them to you want to be able to vote for a senator. You would have two senators and one representative. Is that what it would be?
Yeah.
And that's
now
what you're
one representative because of the size. Yeah, I'm sorry.
And that's what you guys are really seeking. That's what you want.
Yes. And, you know, we also don't have control over our own budget. They have to fund. And you know, it's funny how this works because this comes into effect with the marijuana law. They haven't overturned the law, which they could if they wanted. They've taken out the money for enforcement of the decriminalization out of the budget. So now we have no money to enforce it. So we can decriminalize it and not have any money to – there's like a $25 fine for being caught with up to an ounce of marijuana in the District of Columbia. But we won't have any money to enforce it. So there won't be any fine. They're actually, in effect, probably making the law more liberal. But that's not what this guy's interested in, and it's never what they're interested in. They're interested in making points with their own constituency, which they can do because anything you do in the District of Columbia gets attention, right? It's the nation's capital. So they attack our gun laws, they get publicity. They attack our marijuana laws, they get publicity. So that's what that's all about. And we're sick of it. It's time to do something. It's time to stand up for the District of Columbia.
Exactly. And so do you feel that there's a lot of movement now? Do you feel that people are kind of getting on the wagon with you all to push this through?
Well, you know, it's something that people talk about, but they don't do. And you know, I know you've been an activist, so you understand this, that when you come up with something, like you worked on class size in New York, you know, and I'm sure if you talk to people, they all said, yeah, schools are overcrowded, schools, you know, class size is important, all these things. But then how many people show up for the rally? And that's the situation that we have. You know, everybody in D.C. says, yes, we should be equal American citizens. In fact, 80% of America, when they were surveyed by a group in town called D.C. Vote, agreed that we should be equal American citizens. But how many people will stand up for it? You know, so many people say to me, oh, it's never going to happen. It's, you know, finally I say, well, who cares if it's going to happen? We got to push for it anyway, you know?
Right.
Nobody would have said to Rosa Parks, you're always going to sit on the back of the bus. Don't worry about it. You know, they pushed and pushed and pushed until a seminal moment came. And I'm saying right now, for all America, our seminal moment is Kathleen Gomez from Arizona, Kansas, North Dakota, all over the damn place, coming to Washington. That's what's going to get
right.
it done.
That's what's going to get it done.
You're our Rosa Parks.
I'm. That's right. I'm coming to you from all of rural America in support of your effort. Yes. There all we right. are. Right on, man.
Be scared, Congress. Be very afraid. Because Kathleen's coming.
That's right. You know, some people say I carry. That's all I want to say. That's all I have
well,
to say about
now,
it.
Well, that leads me to my favorite news story of the week. I know you've got a couple of things you're going to talk about, but there's a place in Colorado. Have you read about this called Shooter's Grill, where
yes.
all the waiters and waitresses carry guns?
Yes.
Yeah. And so the woman says it's not a gimmick, but how can it not be a gimmick?
Well, you know, some of these bars get really rowdy, and you know that there's going to be people carrying, and they're part of their employees. You know, you probably won't have too much fights going on.
Well, I will say that if I was a waitress, I might want to carry a gun just because I would put my hand on it when I'd say, "Don't forget to leave me a tip." You know, because that right, that's gotta inspire you, right?
Right?
You know, yeah, you're gonna leave 10% to a woman with a gun? I don't think so.
I got your credit card with your address, so don't. I know
yeah,
where you
exactly.
are.
Exactly, I know where you live, and I carry. So, they're doing great business, I guess.
Yeah.
They're getting a lot of publicity. The bar is owned by a woman. Who has a concealed weapon permit, and She says she doesn't force any of the waitresses to wear guns. But, of course, even though I'm for very reasonable gun control, I wouldn't want to be the only person in a room without a gun either. You know, I would.
Especially
you know,
in a bar.
Yeah, especially in a bar, which reminds me of one of my great Kathleen Gomez's stories. When I came to Kathleen's wedding in Arizona, the first night, right, Kathleen had rented out the whole hotel. There were two groups of people in the hotel. There were the people coming to Kathleen's wedding and the guys from the Correctional Institute. Do you remember this? The
yes.
local correctional convention.
Yes.
And I walked into the bar and everybody had guns, and they didn't have sidearms. They had long rifles, all
right.
leaning up against the bar and stuff. And I said to some guy, you know, I asked him what was going on, and he told me, and I said, well, this is very strange to be in a bar with guns all over the place. And he said, well, we're cops. Don't the cops in D.C. carry guns? And I said, yeah, they do, but we don't let them get drunk with them. You know, we make them leave them in the car before they
exactly.
come in the bar to drink, you know, but not so in Arizona. So,
no, not so.
But I never felt unsafe. I have to add that. I felt that I was safe in the bar. But I got to tell you, while I've been out, as you know, I'm campaigning, and I've been out on the streets and in the parade yesterday and a bunch of other places that I've been.
And
we've
let me
heard
just
a
say,
lot from people.
Let me just say to the audience who's listening that my dad was mayor and on the council for 8 years, and we did a float every July 4th. And then mm-hmm. I think for the Christmas break, that is a lot of work. It's a
yeah.
lot of work. It's the traditional kind of American political thing that you do. And I always admire places that have it because I know, like in my town, it ended up being just, you know, trailers of like Little League, you know, kids. The politicians,
yeah.
not all of them do it anymore, and they should because that yeah. really is, you know, Americana. So I just want to say I respect you a lot because I do not miss that at all. And, you know, throwing
right.
the candy out and all that, it's a lot of hard work. So how far you were in Palisades, which is that by Adams Morgan?
It's down along the river. It's
right.
down along the river, and it's a nice little community, and we've done this for years. And at the end, they throw this amazing big picnic with a country western band, and they cook thousands of hot dogs. I don't know how they cook these hot dogs, but they're the best damn hot dogs. And they have watermelon and hot dogs and lemonade and a big tent with a band at the local recreation center. And it's just such a really sweet event. And it's something that you don't get a lot of in D.C. There's another parade that's like it on Capitol Hill. For the most part, D.C. is a nice collection of neighborhoods, as you know. You lived in the
right.
Adams Morgan neighborhood. But and every neighborhood has its own, like, festival or flavor to it, which is really nice. But we have a lot of national things. So, of course, the big event here on the 4th of July is the national parade down Constitution Avenue and then a concert on the steps of the Capitol. And if you sit anywhere in front of the Capitol, you have a perfect view of the fireworks display on the Mall, which is just an amazing fireworks demonstration. And the National Symphony Orchestra always starts with John Philip Sousa when the fireworks starts. So there you are listening to, wonderful patriotic music, watching the fireworks, and then they put on a show. Like yesterday, Michael McDonald was there, and the Muppets, and Jordan Sparks, and you know they have all these celebrities that come out and sing and stuff, and it's great. They always start when the band starts to play John Philip Sousa, you know it's coming, and
right.
and it's fun. It's great to watch, and if you've never done it. You should come to Washington on 1/4 of July and do it. But the community parade is what we're involved in, and it's always a lot of fun, too, because it really is a nice little community in the Palisades.
Oh, I bet. Now I remember where it is, and you're right. It's such a very peaceful little community. That must have been really nice.
Yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun, and you get to throw candy out, and the kids love
yeah.
it. you know, all your friends show up, so people shout out to you, and it's a good time, and I drug my kids. We let my teenage son drive the car, and Mary and her friends walk behind the car throwing candy, and you know. And by the way, just so you know, the most excited member of the Brown family to see Kathleen Gomez is her goddaughter, Mary Brown, who because Kathleen is super permissive with my kids. I don't know what she's doing with her kids, but you know, they get their ears pierced, they get all sorts of things when Aunt Kathleen comes to town. So Mary's already got a list together for you of things she wants you to work on when you show up.
All right, I'll be there. But, you know, I'm a little concerned because we're having Mateo come down for a couple of days to see how DC is, because he was so young when he came down. So it should be interesting on seeing the dynamics of these kids. Now, we were all knew each other way before they were born, and then they've kind of known each other as they've grown up. But it's been a while since they've seen each other, so it's going to be interesting to see how the dynamic is. I remember I have to tell people this story, and this is why Patty is such a dream. You know, I like her so much because between you and I, we can never get anything. Remember when Mateo stuck his head in your grandfather's chair that is like you know, he had made, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Had it, you know.
It's like a family heirloom, yeah.
Oh, it's this beautiful chair. It's so intricate. And somehow Mateo got his head stuck in there. And so he, of course, yells for me and Michael. We just go, oh, we were figuring we're going to have to get the saw. Yeah. We're going to have to cut the chair. And then Patty simply just took his head and boom, boom, and he was out. So I'll never forget that. He doesn't remember that story.
She's amazing in an emergency. We had another incident that I'll always remember when Nikki was a baby. This is my son. And he had croup, you know, and that's just a terrible thing to see because they bark, you know, they suck in.
And
you can tell they're not getting enough air, and it's like he's suffocating. And I, of course, you know me, I'm hysterical. I'm running around like Chicken Little, and she very calmly picks him up, takes him in the bathroom, closes the door, fills the bathroom with steam, and then walks him outside into the cold air, and he goes and sucks in one time real quick, and it's gone. And while I'm running around dialing 911, running around the house screaming. So, yeah, Patty's the best in an emergency, I'll say
that. She really is. She really is. So, I don't know, do we want to take a break, or should we go on to the next interesting subject I have about baby boomers?
Yeah, let's talk about baby boomers for a minute, and we'll take a break.
And, you know, this interests me because this is who we are, right? We're the baby right. boomer generation, because if you were born between, I guess, the mid-40s to the mid-1960s, they're saying now that the baby boomers are heading all age groups in death by suicide. That since 2008, there has been, I guess there's usually 12 out of every 100,000 deaths, 12 are by suicide. And then it's broken up into all kinds of categories, older people who are, you know, terminally ill, to young people who are depressed, blah, blah, blah. But it's now the baby boomers, it's 12 to 100 for every 100,000 deaths. There's actually 12, I'm sorry, 10 was the other statistic, of baby boomers. And they're mostly our age group. They're committing suicide, and a lot of them in the Midwest. So, you know, it's kind of, I can understand, because I think they're talking about the expectations that we had when we were growing up. Remember, we were going to change the world, and we were going to have world peace, and we were going to have, you know, cure the world from sicknesses. Remember all those very idealistic things that we were going to do in our generation. And if anything, I mean, I think it's a far cry from what probably we thought it would be like.
Well, I think so. And I think a lot of us, you know, I hate to say sold out, because that sounds so, you know, it sounds like such a terrible way to put it, because what we really did was we got older and started to deal with the realities of having kids and paying bills and, you know, all the things that everybody goes through as they get older. But you know what? I don't think our parents had the kind of choices that we had. You know, I think, right. especially our mothers, you know, they certainly didn't have the choices we have. How many people do you know that are our age that didn't choose to have their children? I mean, almost, you know, maybe they had what we used to call the whoops baby, you know, but most people before they went into parenthood decided that that's what they wanted to do. And they did it older in life and they did, you know, I had some guy yesterday that I was talking to at Eastern Market and he was at least 65 and he had an 18-month-old with him.
Oh my gosh.
You know, yeah, his daughter. And, you know, when I was trying to get him to support my campaign and I came this close to saying, what a cute little grandchild you have, when he introduced her as his daughter. And I'm like, thank God I didn't say that.
Oh my gosh.
But you know, we have them older in life. We're on the one hand, more prepared for them. But on the other hand, I think maybe you're right that we have different expectations. You know, we have more divorce and
right.
and I think people in middle age get more depressed than they used to in some cases. But it surprises me that there's a lot of suicide among middle aged.
And the thing they also were saying, not only is it due to the fact that, you know, we're getting older and stuff, but they were also saying how many drugs that our age group is kind of addicted to or take,
yeah.
especially with oxycodone and, you know, all the depression. And I think it's also, you know, as more and more people our age realize that there's really not that, okay, you know, you played by the rules, you worked for a company for a long time, well, and right. you're going to get that reward. You're going to get a piece of the American pie. You'll be able to have vacations. You'll be able to own your own place. You'll be able to save some money and go out and do things. And I think that for a lot of people, was something they thought was really going to, you know, wasn't going to take much, but now realize it's way out of their range. And I think
yep.
that there is a sense of desperation as you look to getting older. Now your parents are also staying alive longer. So
right.
you're having to take care of them and then on top of yourself. And there's really no savings you may have had, you know, for this kind of situation where the economy is bad and you may have lost, you know, remember the stock market crash in 1987? That
yeah.
affected a lot of people in our
yeah.
you know, age group. So, I, you know, it's sad to think of it, but I can definitely see why it's happening. Definitely.
Well, if you're out there and you're depressed, call us because
we'll
cheer you
worse.
Up. Yeah, because we won't make it worse. We'll cheer it up. We'll cheer you up because when
no,
we come
we
back,
understand.
We're gonna talk about we're gonna talk about some happy stuff.
We understand your pain, and that's very
you know,
comforting. You know what they say?
Yeah, Debbie Downer from Kansas out there. But we're gonna talk about some happy stuff when we come back. So let's take a break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Here's one. This is one of my favorite, all-time favorites about living in America in honor of the 4th of July. Here's Steve Miller, and we'll be back in a few minutes. And we're back. And just when Kathleen was getting us all depressed, now we got to lift things up a little bit. But first, we want to talk about this commercial that's getting just a zillion hits. I really want your opinion on this, Kathleen. It's getting a lot of hits on the internet. It's by the people that make Always feminine hygiene stuff, and it's called Like a Girl, and they have young girls who talk in the beginning and boys about what it's like to throw like a girl and run like a girl and, you know, and how derogatory this is. And then at the end of the commercial, they have girls come back and say, you know, running like a girl means running as fast as you can. And you know, throwing like a girl is like this, you know, and they show you how to throw, and they say, and being a girl means is a positive thing. It's not something you should be ashamed of. So how do you feel about that?
Well, it was interesting because those same girls that when they said to them, you know, how would you like throw a ball like a girl, they threw it very, you know, like a boy would. But right. when they were asked to throw it like a girl, they did it in the very weak, like, you know, I can't throw
right.
motions. So they had the same thoughts of what that meant, even yep. though when they were thinking of themselves, they didn't think that way. So it was interesting. I think it's funny because when you do think about, you know, oh, don't cry like a girl, you know, don't whine like a girl, don't be dumb like a girl. You know, when you think about it, there's so many of that. And we've all heard it 1,000 times. So it is pretty amazing how just those words can mean something so different. It can mean everything from being very weak to, you know, these girls saying, no, I'm very strong. So I found it very interesting. It was the same kind of thing. Have you seen the commercial where they have a two babies, one white and one black, and no. they ask the kids which ones are bad, and they all say the same thing. They say it's the black kid is bad. He's not as good.
Is that right?
Yeah, huh. and it's every age group. It's from the Hispanic kid who's speaking in Spanish to the African-American. Across the board, they all say the same thing, that the white baby is good. So it's amazing how there's these intricate things. I guess that somehow we're not brainwashed with, but we all kind of tend to think that way.
Well, I think we are brainwashed. I think that, you know, I think that we see that. We've also seen studies where they ask people who's more honest, the blonde lady or the brunette lady, and they pick women that look pretty much the same and are young and attractive, and people pick the blonde blue-eyed mm-hmm. women more than they pick the brown-eyed brunette, you know, just because it's a prejudice that we have that you know, we like that. That's the American thing, right? We like the blonde hair, blue-eyed thing. We just are, we see it as a more positive image, and I think we see that. And you know, I think that we've seen this great transition. If you're my age and I'm 60, you've seen this great transition of rights for women over the past 40 years. But still, socially, we treat women, you know, I think, still in a misogynistic way. We you know, we still socially, even politically, they don't make as much money, they don't climb as high usually, and that's all that subtle, you know, the subtle stuff that we're brought up with. Look, I had an uncle that if you cried when you were a little boy, he didn't say you were crying, you were acting like a girl. He called you, he said, stop it, Alice, or right. stop it, Mary. Right. You know, I mean, they weren't nice about it at all. And so boys learn not to cry. They learn to keep it all wrapped up inside. Maybe that's why they're committing suicide when they're middle aged, because they don't know how to let it out and they don't know how to talk. And you know, even my girl. And the funny thing is that it's not men that do this. It's men and women that do it. You know, I never had a female teacher until I was in high school. So if I'm a male chauvinist pig, you know, it's women that made me that way. And it's funny, my kids tease me all the time because I was watching, you know, that I know this woman, Hayden Panettiere.
Right.
She's been involved in our stuff, and she's a great lady. So I'm watching, remember the Titans one
time? Yeah.
Great movie, because she plays a little girl in it. And the kid dies at the end. You know, the heroic kid who gets killed in a car accident, and my kids come in, and there's a tear coming down my cheek, and they're saying, Dad, you're crying. Are you know, they're giving me a hard time. You're a girl, one of them says. I swear to you. And I'm like, the boy died. It's sad he died. You know, he was the good kid and he died. And you know, so they do it too. They see it, yeah, and they perpetuate it, and you know, and how many times have I been in the office situation? An office situation where some feminist has gotten up in my face about something, but then some guy that looks like Brad Pitt comes in and tells a stupid joke and they all giggle. They all go, oh,
so
you
funny.
Know? Yeah.
It's true. It's true.
It's like, hello.
You know,
so
look,
we're all responsible.
I blame women a lot for it also because, you know, if you ask any young girl who maybe has gotten a scholarship on say softball or some other sport, and you ask her about Title IX, I bet you 9.99 out of 10 times she won't know what Title IX is.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't that long ago, and you know, Title IX was that law that was passed that really kind of promoted women's sports and in athletics in the universities and state universities, and kind of created at least where they started to fund some stuff like softball, yeah, and tennis and things like that. So a lot of it is women's. I'm kind of shocked because I'm even embarrassed to say I didn't realize that the ERA had not been passed. And no one's acting on that. I mean, women,
right,
should get that thing done. Talk about,
right,
getting it done. We should get that thing done and passed. And, you know, we're acting like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's not going to, you know, we've got our rights now. We don't have to worry about these things. But that's not true. We've seen things can change very quickly. So women have done a very they've done a very poor job of making sure that their daughters and their sisters or whatever have been educated to remember that wasn't that long ago that we didn't have very much either. And
well,
we should,
yeah,
be understanding and teaching that so that it never really is forgotten. I think most people just assume that this is the way it's always been.
Well, and you know what? I mean, another thing, because I was involved in the feminist movement when I was in graduate school. I studied the Equal Rights Amendment and also the fact that women made less money because of occupational segregation. These were things that I focused on when I was in graduate school. My sister used to like to make the joke that Michael studied girls in college, you know, like that was like any boy, you know, what any boy would have done. But I did study women's issues. And one thing that always bothered me about the women's movement is they didn't reach out more to men and make men understand the importance. Look, if you're married to a woman that's making 76 cents on the dollar, that's taking money out of your pocket, pal, because I don't know how you do it in your family, but in my family, you know, what my wife makes and what I make goes together to pay the bills. So I really fault the feminist movement for not reaching out more to men and saying, look, you've got something to gain here, you know,
right,
because let's be honest about it. When it came to free love, men embraced that right away. They're like, oh, yeah, no problem there, you know. But when it comes to promoting women and giving women what they deserve in the work world and other places, you know, we don't make the right accommodations. And we make plenty of accommodations for men, you know. But women who go out to have children and stuff and have to interrupt their careers, we don't treat them appropriately, and we should, and we should make men understand that they have a vested interest in women being equal. They really do.
Yeah,
and
they do.
And maybe we're getting more towards that philosophy because now women are in combat. They have combat positions. They're, you know, I don't know if you've seen the Air Force commercials that they've done lately with women who are, I mean, men and women, but women who are combat pilots. I mean, mm-hmm, they're, my brother flew an F-111, and there's women out there doing the same thing today. And I think it's a good thing. And you know, now that I mentioned Paul, my brother was out at the Air Force Academy when they first introduced women into the Air Force Academy. You know, used to be all only men. And so women were brought into the Air Force Academy. Paul was part of the counseling center at the Air Force Academy. And he said, you know, they went through all the sensitivity training for personnel at the Air Force Academy to accept women and, you know, teachers and all these people. But the people that they had the most problem with were the students. The male students, yeah, were upset that there were women there. So, you know, this stuff is very subtle. It's very subtle. But I think these commercials are great. And, you know, I think that the more we can do to empower our daughters, I'm the father of two wonderful girls. And my wife will tell you, Patty says that I'm a great theoretical feminist, that I believe that every woman on the planet should be equal except for her, you know, so, and my daughters sometimes too. I really am very liberal with my daughters. I just say, please don't date until I die. That's all I ask. After I die, you can do whatever you want. But right now, just don't date. But we really do have to take some of this stuff seriously. And I think that it's funny how it works culturally. You know, there was the controversial commercial last year about the African-American guy and the mixed race child and the white mom. It's a Cheerios commercial. I think right. You've seen it about, you know, and that was, and I think we need to get this stuff out there. We need to, you know, it needs to become acceptable on all levels for people if we're going to accept it as a society. You know, I know that my son, I think that I always say the good news about race relations is that when Nick was about 12 years old, he told me about some kid on his team named Zach making a fantastic goal during a soccer game. And there was a black kid named Zach and there was a white kid named Zach. And I said to him, which kid was it? Was it the black kid or the white kid? And he said to me, I don't know what color he is, but. And I thought, wow, how cool is that? You know, because mm-hmm. that's after we know, when I was a kid, after we noticed what sex you were, we noticed what color you were. And right. And so maybe there's less of that going on. Let's hope so. Yes. I want to move on and talk about, there are several things going on, but now a little good news for those depressed people out there. I know that Kathleen is going all over America looking for a job. But last month, we added 288,000 new jobs. And for the past 5 months, we've had 200,000 plus growth in jobs every month. And that's the best that's been done in 15 years.
I'm sorry. I want to know the statistic of all the people that had to go off unemployment because that they no longer had those benefits. That's the statistic that I would like to see. But it's funny how nobody has that one.
Look, you know, just because people won't hire you, maybe
it's a lot of
it's
people.
Maybe it's because you're not in one place long enough to have a job. 1 week you're in Arizona, the next week you're in California, then you're in Kansas.
I'm flexible. I can accommodate to any of my surroundings.
You know what? Maybe people are calling you with jobs, but they just can't find you because they don't know what state you're in. I know. It is a mixed statistic, and it would be interesting to see how many people are getting off the unemployment rolls because mm-hmm. they've given up. Certainly, we know a lot of people in
that. Or their benefits run out, because that's another thing that's very interesting is that each state is so different. So you may think, like in New York, it was actually, I realized how I was unemployed at one point in time, and I had unemployment benefits for quite a bit. And they really helped a lot. I actually was able to maintain a lifestyle, not a great one, but I was able to pay my bills. And in Arizona, it was over very quickly and very little money. So it's kind of interesting how you pay into that system, but I wonder if it's ever something you really get your money out of.
Well, you know, just on a personal note between you and me, I've been talking to you for a long time about moving to why you were crazy enough to move back to Arizona. We didn't get to talk about this last week, but you know that they also have the highest alcoholism, one of the highest alcoholism rates and deaths from alcohol in Arizona.
In Arizona?
Yeah. They're only, and it's funny, the only two places that are on the same par are New Mexico, which is like one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life, and Alaska. You can understand how you could be depressed in Alaska, especially during the winter. But yeah, but they have more deaths by alcohol, more deaths by firearms. Jesus, there ought to be a lot of jobs out there because you're losing people right and left.
No, what the problem is, they don't have very good jobs. So I could, like I said, be a truck driver. And I could be a, call center person, which I understand that's going to be close to having the, I give credit for anyone who could do well in that kind of a job. So it's just not a land of opportunity. So I'm headed back east to the cold, it seems to. We'll see what happens. But
let me just say this. If you're out there in America and you have a job, please do not let this woman drive a truck. We'll all be in danger if she drives a truck. Call her in. Right. A woman with a bad attitude with a gun in a truck is not a good combination.
In her mid-50s somewhere on the lower side.
In her mid-50s on the lower side.
Yeah, losing it.
On the lower east side. The lower east side with a gun in a truck. With a bad attitude. You don't want to cut this woman off in traffic, let me tell you.
Save me so the nation can be saved. There
right.
We go.
Do this for America. Don't do it for her. Don't do it for yourself. Do it for America. On the 4th of July, I think that's the right message to be sending out to people. Save America. Give Kathleen a job. That's what I say.
Go ahead.
One last thing that I want to say before we get off the air, and maybe we can talk about this more next week, is the Washington Post reported that the NSA has collected hundreds of thousands of our calls and emails from regular citizens over the last 4 years. Now, this is something that they're not supposed to do without a warrant. They're only supposed to do it with a warrant. They're allowed to surveil foreigners, foreign nationals, but not Americans. And the NSA, this was all given to the Washington Post by Edward Snowden. Some people think he's a traitor and should be lined up against the wall and shot. And some people call him a hero. I don't know exactly how I feel about him. I think he's a little of both. But they've given up 160 emails and they've captured instant messages and other types of social media. And, you know, we'd love for you next week. Let's talk a little bit about it next week to call in and say how you feel about that. Because I don't know. How do you feel about it, Kathleen?
I just would like to know what are the flags that make them decide that they're going to look at, you know, a certain person's stuff. And you know, I can't imagine how these people can go through all this. I mean, how many people do they have working to go through all these things to collect this stuff?
Yeah.
That's my next question. How many employees are in the NSA doing that typical work? It's mind-boggling to think. And, you know, how do they decide?
Well,
Well,
and you talk about having a boring job, you know. I can barely make it through Facebook. I looked at some of the stuff. But we're running out of time, so let me say goodbye and let me give you the last word.
Oh, no. I just want to thank everyone out there for listening to us, and I hope you had a great 4th of July, and to all the veterans that have been serving and have served, you know, our hats go off to you and to you, Michael, for actually going through a very difficult process that really makes me feel warm in my heart that I know that you doing the American process of running for an election, it's quite a trip and it's a lot of dedication. And I know how hard it is getting those signatures. You have to get quite a few. So, you know, my hat's off to you and Patty, and I'll be there to join you. So we'll see what we can do.
Looking forward to it. And we'll both be coming to you live from Washington next week. So thanks for listening, and especially the veterans. Happy 4th of July. Give the people their right to vote.